I heard the band has now been in existence since the 80s. How did everything come together? 8 people making music together? How?
We were friends, and also at that time when punk rock brought loads of people together that were completely different and from different backgrounds that don't quite happen in the same way now. And we were squatters. You know, we squatted a house together, and everybody that moved into the house more or less became in the band by default, not because we were musicians or anything, just because we all happened to be there and we all had aspirations to do something creative together.
I tried to look up the name Chumbawamba in a dictionary, but I couldn't find anything. Is it just because of the rhyme in the name, or...?
No, you'd find it in a reference book, a football reference book in England called Rothman's Yearbook. And it's just it's just all the facts and figures about football. And Chumbawamba is just some mascot of a team called Walford Town in the 1930s. And we just thought it was funny, so we used that name.
What I found most interesting is that your style is always connected with something like pop, but there are so many influences from ballads, from rock songs, from folk songs, I don't know what... how does that everything go together with pop?
We're cosmopolitical, I can't say it. Cosmopolitical. No, that's what all the bands that have any sort of longevity and, you know, last for years always let other influences in and always bring new things to each album. And we're not all really brave. It's not like we're all going, yeah, we'll put this in. It's just at different times people say, OK, I want to try this, and they drag the rest of us along.
And I think it's, you know, like with the Beatles, they had When I'm 64 and Helter Skelter, and you couldn't think of two more different songs, but they come from the same band. And we always, that's what we aspire to we want our history to sound like a compilation album.
But I think the influences are quite more different. Isn't it hard to tell people who possibly don't know you yet what you're doing?
Yeah, we went to a record shop just up the road up here, and the bloke in the record shop, he said, oh, what kind of music do you play? And it's always really weird when people say that, because you can't really, you know, you say, oh, sort of punk, pop, folk, sort of with some dance sort of breakbeats and harmonies. It doesn't really describe it.
You know, the only really safe thing you can say is it's not heavy metal.
I read that the influences come from all 8 people in the band. Isn't it sometimes hard?
It's not true. It's not like we all have an equal thing of, you know, every time we make a record, we don't go, okay, we're all going to do this, this and this. Different people lead at different times, and, you know, that's the nature of any group of people. So when you say, isn't it hard, then there might be 2 or 3 people going one way at a certain point, and the others sit back and let them do it. And I think that's why it works, because the 2 or 3 people that are leading changes.
But again, in general, isn't it hard to work with 8 people? I mean, everybody has an opinion to the song you're playing and possibly doesn't like it.
I think sometimes it's hard to work with 8 people, but I think we've just sort of naturally found a way that we can work with each other. And that's basically by acknowledging each other's strengths and each other's weaknesses, and by accepting that it doesn't all just boil down to one person making all the decisions about everything.
It's seeing it as a whole as well. I mean, I think what happens in most bands is people don't see things as a whole. The guitarist sees his guitar and wants it a bit louder. The vocalist sees what they do and, you know, thinks that they're leading the band, whereas we don't look at it like that. We actually realise that we're much better as a group of people than we would be as individuals. So when we look at things, you don't look at, OK, what would do my ego the most good? You look at what would do the band the most good. And that's, I think, a difficult trick to learn.
Alice, you've connected the band with words like rebellish or punk rock a few minutes ago. One thing I read from your information letter is that punk rock isn't really a music style, but a lifestyle. So would you say Chumbawamba are punks somehow?
No, I wouldn't say it's a lifestyle. I mean, I think it's an ethos. It's, you know, it's a way of not going with the status quo and of being brave and of basing your decisions not on financial things, but on creative things. You know, and that's going against the status quo, because now everything's based on financial things, isn't it? You know, you look at what's in the charts. It's all led by manufactured bands or R&B that, you know, that basically they realise R&B is selling really well at the moment. There's some brilliant R&B bands. I'm not knocking. I think Destiny's Child are fantastic. But there's so many copies out there that it's not about creativity or taking risks or even doing it just for passion and for love of it. It's about a record company saying, OK, at this point in time, this sells, we'll have another one.
When we have a look at the press, it seems some songs are quite rebellious. There was one article in The Sun that criticized two songs of you, Anarchy and Tub Thumping. Would you say general mood in the band is a bit rebellious?
Yeah. I think that if we can make newspapers, especially newspapers like The Sun, if we can get those newspapers to write about us and say how much they hate us, then that's great. That's what we want. We want to be we want to cause some kind of reaction, some kind of opinion and debate and discussion. We don't want to just be nice wallpaper.
When you see it from the outside, there are quite impressive melodies, beautiful melodies, but sometimes texts that hide deeper information. Is it important for you to transport something to the people? There were some songs on What You See Is What You Get that criticized, for example, Nazis. Is it important for you to tell the people something and not just to make good music?
I mean, I think it's important for anybody involved in any sort of art form to alter other people's perception of the world. But that doesn't mean to say that we see ourselves as writing manifestos, because I think you can alter people by making something that's emotional, you know, as well as intellectual. So, yeah, it's important for us that what we do has a point and to be engaged with the world and to be connected to things outside ourselves, you know, like at the moment all the stuff that's going on with anti-capitalist movement is really important to us, but we don't think we have to stand up on stage and sing about it every 10 minutes, because in a way you're part of something, but you don't need to ram it down people's throats, you know, because music is like an art form. You can be a bit poetic about it. So when you say, is it important to get a message across, in a way I think it's more important for us to be involved in things outside ourselves and have this creative life that occasionally we can use to talk about things that are going on in the outside world, but we don't want to do that all the time because it's too limiting. Do you think that sounds wishy-washy?
No, sounds all right.
Do you think it's quite good that so many people know you and that it's more important that you're going to tell the people what's right?
I think it's more that I don't think we're trying to tell people what's right. I think what we're doing is we're saying things about the world that other pop music and rock and roll music just doesn't talk about now, because most pop music and rock and roll, even when it's good music, good rock music, it's brainless. It's just rubbish. You know, it's just wallpaper music. But even if it's, you know, it can be fantastic, but it doesn't go any further than that piece of plastic.
You know, for instance, one of my favourite songs for years, I didn't know what it meant. It's called Mississippi Goddamn, and you know, it's about Mississippi basically and racism and, you know, little kids not getting to school and, you know, 70% of blacks rotting in jail. And I never, even though I knew it were completely political and it had fantastic lyrics and really, really clever musically, you know, took you all over emotionally, I didn't know that it had been written after the Alabama church bombing. And then I found out it had been written after the Alabama church bombing and that it were an expression of rage about what were happening in people's lives. And it became more important to me, because it had an added context as well, and in a way that's what we try and do with pop music, that if people enjoy what we do, just as an emotional thing, brilliant, but there's also another context to it that, you know, and if they get something out of the fact that things are written out of, like, anger or joy or passion or, you know, or just in a way, a need to communicate something. It's like the war in Iraq at the moment. One that's not happening in Iraq, but that will be at any point. It is really important that people who are involved in creative things stand up and make statements, because you don't get the media talking about alternative viewpoints to what George Bush is doing and what Tony Blair's doing. You know, even if they criticise him to a certain extent, there's still this, you know, yeah, but Saddam Hussein's a bastard and we've got to stop him somehow. There's a general thrust to the right, and I think it's important for creative people to counter that thrust.
Throughout the years, your style has grown better and has surely proceeded, changed in the course of time. But when you have a look at your current album, Ready Mates, would you say it's a new milestone? There are quite a lot of breakbeats and samples in it that previously haven't taken that much room in your music.
I think it's just another attempt that we've made to move somewhere, to move our whole, our ideas and our music and everything, just to shift it somewhere else. And it's not like we've ever done a thing where you can follow a line, where you can follow a linear path of us changing. It's just that every record we sit down and go, let's move this somewhere else. And that to us is really important. That's really important because it means we don't get bored. And it means that even if people don't like, you know, the next album, it's important that they know that it's changed. It's really important to us.
To this answer, now I have the question, what's going to be next? Something completely different, or what are your plans now for the future?
It'll be something different, definitely, yeah. But I don't know what. We're having a meeting in 2 weeks where maybe we'll talk about that sort of thing. We have a lot of our decisions to do with music are made by sitting down in rooms and discussing them. So maybe we'll see. I think a Christmas album, which is all like sleigh bells and Father Christmas on the front and reindeers.
Maybe Baby Jesus nailed to a crucifix.
Yeah, that'll be next. Maybe we're thinking of doing some... we already have half recorded a Schlager album, which is just for the German people.
It's a non-alcoholic Schlager album.
Yeah, we're doing a Schlager that's not to do with... You're not allowed to drink to it. And some umpa music with... we all wear lederhosen on stage, and that's the next big direction, I think.
Okay, there are a lot of new things to come. Thank you, Alice. Yeah. Thank you, Bob, for the interview.
Thank you.